into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what do we get, a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Well, as you can imagine, anger was the prevailing mood at UEFA today as they unveiled their rather bloated version of the Champions League as they see it. Alexander Seferin, president of UEFA, stole the show. Lots of good lines from Alexander. I don't want to call them the dirty dozen, but he started things off. And then he went on to talk about some of the parties involved in this Super League breakaway effort. I've seen many things in my life. I was a criminal lawyer for 24 years, so I've seen different people, but I've never seen people like this. If I start with Ed Woodward, I didn't have much contact with him, but he called me on Thursday evening saying he's very satisfied with the Champions League reforms announced today, that he fully supports the reforms, and that the only thing he would like to speak about is financial fair play. And obviously, he already signed something else. And then he moved on to Andrea Agnelli, at Juventus, godfather to one of his children. Interestingly, these two are close, Agnelli and Seferin, or they were close. So he said of Agnelli, he's probably the biggest disappointment of all. I don't want to be too personal, but the fact is I've never seen a person lie so many times, so persistently. That he did was unbelievable. I spoke with him Saturday afternoon. He said, these are only rumours. Don't worry, nothing is going on. And then he said, I'll call you in 1 hour. He turned off his phone. The next day, we get the announcement. I've seen many things in my life, but not a situation like that. Philippe Auclair, hello.
Hello, how are you?
They were good quotes. I had to start with them.
Yeah, you bet. Absolutely.
Can I start with maybe the most interesting aspect, I suppose, or the biggest question mark, is how likely is this breakaway effort to succeed, do you think?
Very unlikely. I think that the chances are extremely slim. The very, very quick reaction of UEFA certainly will play a role in that. The fact as well that you've seen German clubs and French clubs distanciate themselves immediately from this project means that doesn't really have much of a leg to stand on. So I would imagine that it will be a question of days rather than weeks before we see more chinks appearing in the armor and more clubs and some clubs within even the 12 deciding that it was really not worth the risk to carry on like that. To be absolutely honest, I'm a bit surprised by what looks more and more like the incompetence of this project.
I also don't see it happening. Now, a lot of people do really think it will happen and it's inevitable. So many hurdles need to be jumped. For instance, what's your sense of how the Premier League and La Liga and Serie A would see this? Like in the grand game of chicken, do the Premier League need Manchester United more than Manchester United need the Premier League?
Manchester United hasn't always been in the top division of English football. It's... I think there's a great, I mean, the idea that we are more important than this is ridiculous, to be absolutely honest, especially in the current circumstances where I think if you were to have a poll today of people who are Premier League fans and particularly Premier League fans in England or in the UK, you would find most of them so disgusted with their own clubs that they would be quite happy to see them relegated. I'm one of them, I must admit. I don't care. What's happening to what will happen to my club in terms of points deducted, relegation? To be honest, I'm disgusted like everybody else. The idea that a club or a couple of clubs or several clubs are more important than the division that they're in is just simply ludicrous. It might make sense in terms of the kind of audience that they're garnering abroad, for example, perhaps in territories where people are not so-called legacy fans. An expression that I'm sure you've appreciated when you saw it used. Mm-hmm. But I think elsewhere, to be absolutely honest, you know, Chelsea was in the second division not that long ago. Leeds were in the championship not that long ago, just a couple of years ago, and look at them, they're one of the main attractions of the league today. So it moves very, 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 very quickly. And this case of hubris, thinking that, you know, you are so important that the league cannot live without you, is just simply ridiculous, to be absolutely honest.
It's hubris, and also a recognition that things do change, and they want to guard against that. I mean, the US owners in particular, I'm sure they look with horror at the notion that they don't know the following season whether or not they'll have 25% of their revenue coming in from the Champions League. It goes against their sporting world. I'm sure that's part of their thinking. They don't think this is a way to run a business. So it's hubris, absolutely, but it is probably also a recognition that things do change, and they want a lock stock guarantee that things won't change for them financially. That's the motivation here, ultimately.
The motivation, I think, goes deeper than that. I think they believe that there is an existential threat against their domination, financial domination. Look at the clubs which have been the signatories of this agreement, the Dirty Dozen. You will see an awful lot of them are in dire straits, financially speaking.
Yeah.
The Italian clubs is desperate. When you look at Milan, it's a complete basket case. Inter is not very far behind. Juventus as well, which is winning nothing these days anyway, who cares? And we're actually, by the way, they were in Serie B not that long ago after a few shenanigans of their own. These clubs, what many of them have in common is very difficult financial situations. Liverpool is another one.
Yeah.
Manchester City has just posted, I think, 172 million euros loss over the 2019-2020 season. I don't know what the 2020-21 season is going to be like, but it's not going to be better. So they're faced with this horrible situation for people who are full of money, which is to have to spend it.
Yeah.
To actually stay afloat, which, of course, they're better equipped than anybody else in football because they've got very deep pockets and financial fair play has basically been suspended. So they could do it, but they're so greedy that they want to have more and more and more money. And therefore, this is one of the reasons why this whole project, which has been, I know, it's been preparation for years and years, some would say even decades. I saw a piece in the Gazzetta which showed Berlusconi was talking about it in 1988. But this is different. And I think that they're panicking. It's partly hubris, and partly it's panic, because the economic and financial model they've been living on is simply unsustainable. Well, Barcelona has got €1 billion debt.
Well, Bayern Munich make that point as well. So in their statement where they say they're not getting involved and they're convinced the current structure guarantees a reliable foundation, they add all clubs in Europe should work together. And they pointedly, at the end of their statement, talk about the cost structures, especially player salaries, agent fees, need to be brought into line with revenues. And that does highlight the ultimate issue here, that the system is broken. You have a number of clubs who have oil money or billionaire owners, and then you have the old money types trying to keep up with them, those in Italy, for instance. You have Manchester United having to generate revenue after revenue to stay as, you know, richest club in the world to compete. Barcelona can't compete. So the system does not work. The system is broken, and UEFA's financial fair play has been exposed for the charade that it is. I mean, statute of limitations against Manchester City was just an embarrassment to all concerns as the reason for that case failing, which should have been a watertight case otherwise. So ultimately, this is a product. This desperation is a product of a broken system. The Bayern statement tries to get at that a little bit.
It is. And the extraordinary thing as well is the Bayern statement happens on the day when Karl-Heinz Rummenigge replaces Andrea Agnelli at the head of the ECA, which has now been vacated by the Dirty Dozen. And on the day as well when UEFA has basically put in place a system which is in itself already a super league, but doesn't have this name. You know, the changes to the Swiss system from 2024-2025 season onwards have been agreed today, and they will basically mean that we will have something which is very much like it's a kind of Super League, which dare not say its name, but you know, with relegation, promotion, so it's more acceptable. It's just an extension of, I would say, the privileges that were granted to the super elite within European football. So it's also quite interesting to see that, in a way, this allows the whole scandal. Allows UEFA to get away with what is in itself already a scandal.
Yeah, and that was that was driven by the big boys. That was UEFA trying to placate the big boys. Yeah,
absolutely. From the very beginning, you can say that UEFA has been in bed with the big boys, including especially Bayern Munich, from very, very early on. Bayern were one of the main clubs involved in the whole structuration of this, and also in the setting of the FFP rules, because it actually benefited them from the beginning. So we shouldn't have any whataboutery, because that's dreadful, but we should remember that UEFA is putting in place a system that in normal circumstances would also provoke the irk and the anger of fans absolutely everywhere in Europe.
Just to give people a sense of the money and how the Super League Dirty Dozen intend for the money to work. So JP Morgan will put forward 3.5 billion up front. So straight away, the 15 clubs, all of these 15 clubs that they're hoping to ultimately get to from 12, they would get a 350 million signing fee. Now, to put that in context, Bayern last year got 90 million for winning the Champions League. So straight away, 350 million up front. And then once this thing gets running, they estimate that they'll generate 4 billion per year TV money, which after certain costs will leave 3.15 billion. So let's call it 3 billion. Of that 3 billion, 32% of the 3 billion gets shared amongst the founding 15 clubs. The next 32% of that 3 billion goes to the 15 clubs again and the five clubs who managed to make it in for that year. And then 35% goes according to finishing places, who wins, who doesn't win, who gets to the semi-final, etc.
Yeah.
I mean, this is stunning money. And even, and let's not, you know, let's dismiss this for what it is, which is nonsense, but even the solidarity payments. So they're saying, look, we're going to put away a lot of money for the pyramid. They're talking about 400 million a year. Interestingly, UEFA only give 240 million a year. Maybe that's offset by the extra 16 teams not involved. But you take my point. There's so much money slushing around. They can even, in this barefaced grab, they can even be more generous than UEFA are to the lesser teams in a perverse kind of way.
They're not more generous than UEFA when you go actually into the detail.
I'm sure,
of it.
Yes.
When you go into the way that the UEFA money is distributed, they are not more generous. That's a complete red herring.
Yeah.
The question of the finances is one that fascinates me, because JP Morgan might be financing, but not investing any money. They're not investing 1 cent in this Super League. The money is not coming from JP Morgan. And that's a question that I wish was really high on the agenda, because what JP Morgan is doing is what any bank would be doing, which is basically to give you a line of credit.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly, if I were going to a mortgage company and I would ask them, okay, can you lend me 250 grand so I can buy myself, probably in Dublin, a studio flat, with above a sewer, I would imagine, something like that. Anyway, some money to
with our prices, Philippe, that will cost you about a million, so let's call it that.
Okay, let's call it that. And you say, okay, I want that money, and you're lent the money, you're giving the line of credit. Are you going to say that the bank has invested in your flat? Of course not. It's just lent you money. And JP Morgan, that's exactly what they're doing. They're providing a financial service, which is they're giving a line of credit, but they're not putting a cent in it, and which is one thing that I think almost nobody has mentioned, that where is the money coming from? No transparency. It can come from two things. It can come either from a broadcaster, and when I say broadcaster, probably a digital platform. I don't think that a traditional broadcaster would have this kind of money available. We're more talking about one of the big guys. You know, you're talking Google, Netflix, Amazon, one of those guys. Then the other possibility is that you have some of these very eager nation states which are willing to invest into sport for sports washing reasons would go into that. We know, for example, that the grandiose Club World Cup project, Gianni Infantino's big project, was supposed to be underwritten or actually financed by Saudi Arabia. I don't know. I'm just giving you possible hypothesis. One thing I can tell you for sure, JP Morgan are not putting any money in this.
Yeah.
So the money is not coming from an American bank. The money is coming from somebody else. And of course, none of these guys has got the guts to tell you where it's coming from, because possibly you can mortgage future earnings. But if you mortgage future earnings, believe me, if you go to JP Morgan and tell them, guys, we're going to make shitloads of money, with apologies for my English here, we're going to make loads of money. Mm-hmm. And they will say, how? And you will say, well, we've got an agreement with a broadcaster. So it's all in place. Because if it's not in place, JP Morgan wouldn't be involved. Yeah. But they're not telling us the truth. There's another reason not to like these people very much.
Sure. There are so many strands to this. Like, I haven't even mentioned the fact that Seferin has said there'll be no international football for the players, or Jesper Muller, Danish UEFA member, as I'm sure you know, has said Chelsea, yes. Man City and Real Madrid will be out of the Champions League by Friday. Same for Arsenal and Manchester United in the Europa League. So even, you know, that is such a seismic move if they make the move. What about the no international football? The legalities of that, can that be enforced? I mean, a lot of the players, I'm not saying all, but a lot of the players won't like that.
I don't think that legally there's a chance whatsoever of seeing players being prevented from joining their national teams for the 2020 Euro.
Okay.
Further than that, it's a difficult one to judge, because there have been a couple of interesting cases with players, well, sports people, being involved with in other sports, i.e. figure skating is one and wrestling is another. And you would think that they're minor sports. Yeah, but legally it counts. And sure. In both cases, it was found by the European Commission and by various courts in continental Europe that banning those people, those athletes who were competing in parallel or breakaway leagues, would actually constitute restraint of trade. Okay. So therefore they were allowed to do that. And it's a legal minefield. One thing I hope is that it will force the European Parliament, the European Commission, to look at the situation of sport and to look at the legalities of it. In a case of a Euro 2020, there's absolutely no way UEFA or FIFA could possibly ban players who will not have taken part in a competition that does not exist.
Yes.
It's as simple as that.
Yes. So a difficult final question then, with all the legalities, with all the various strands, with all the bluff and bluster which is going on, I'm sure, at various levels, and the politicking behind the scenes, and, you know, the PSG and the German club stance, how do you think this will play out, and over what kind of time frame?
It's very difficult to predict, because what is happening at the moment is pure chaos. And I don't think what is happening now was necessarily planned. What I'm hearing is that the leaks which got into the Sunday papers were not originating from the Super League themselves, and that they were in a way hoist by your own petard, I believe is the expression. And that therefore the response has been very scattergun-like. You will have noticed that, you know, that the statements were coming one after the other. There was no real, it didn't seem like it was something which was very well orchestrated.
No, there was nothing slick about this at all. No.
No, it's dreadful. And my personal feeling, it's a feeling at the moment, is that this will peter out very, very quickly. And that a few of, because at the moment we've only got 12, whose names we know. We thought we knew the names of three others. We're not going to name them because they've decided not to come out. And of these 12, some of them seem to me very lukewarm. I'm thinking of Barcelona in particular. And I would, given the seriousness of the threats that have been made against the breakaway clubs, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a few other people breaking ranks and possibly I don't know how they're going to do it, because imagining Florentino Perez or JW Henry with a tail between their legs, if you excuse the simile, I would enjoy it greatly, I think.
Oh, let the groveling commence.
Oh, it would be absolutely, seeing Florentino Perez grovel would be honestly, oh, what a dream. And but I'm not sure how it's going to happen. But to be honest, I don't think there is a chance in hell that this Super League is going to happen.
Yeah. And was your sense that they expected it to happen genuinely, or was this always a bit of brinksmanship?
I think there was a lot of brinksmanship, and I think sometimes when you brinksman, that's not a verb, but we'll use it,
yeah,
a little bit too much, yeah, and you're not on top of what you've unleashed. You've unleashed the hounds of hell, and sure enough, they've taken you there. So again, not many tears will be shed for these people, but I do think that in this case that there's an element of hubris again, that they think these people think that they're we can't do without them, that we cannot live without Manchester United, Real Madrid, or whatever. And that, in a way, I think the probably are surprised by the strength of the reaction, the depth of the reaction, and the violence of the reaction too. Can they do a U-turn? I don't know. I mean, to be honest, Joe, I mean, for the last 24 hours, we've all been going, what? And I think we might do that for a few more days yet. And if on Friday, as Mr. Muller says, those clubs are excluded from the Champions League of the Europa League, well, what can you say?
Yeah, extraordinary.
Lawyers, I'm going to have a field day, that's for sure.
For sure. Listen, Philippe, I know you're super busy today. Thank you so much for your time. Much
pleasure.
Appreciated. Yeah, great to have you on. Philippe Auclair.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now, welcome along to the football show. Later on, we'll bring you Vinnie Perth. He was on commentary for us yesterday from Old Trafford. Nathan Murphy alongside him, and chatted to Vinnie afterwards about the situation at Dundalk, which is obviously interesting. They need to replace their management team all of a sudden, so we'll bring you that later on. At Elland Road, it's Leeds 0, Liverpool 1. Sadio Mane with the Liverpool goal, 46 minutes on the clock. Second half has just started. We have much to discuss with Pat Nevin. How you doing?
I'm absolutely frazzled. That's what I am. I'm
overstimulated, frazzled.
My head's bursting, honestly. I don't know where I'm going just now. Yeah. I was down at the Chelsea game, Man City game, which was a big enough story in itself. And the next day I was at the Arsenal versus Fulham game, which is exciting because, you know, 7 minutes into injury time. I'm doing Chelsea tomorrow against, I'm down there for their game against Brighton. And none of that matters. No. You just think the bizarre world where Jose Mourinho getting sacked is hardly a story.
I know.
Extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary the way it's gone in the last couple of days.
We'll have to make a point to get to Mourinho, or to set aside a few minutes at the end of this chat for Mourinho, because there's every chance we'll run out of time. Monday Night Football seemed like an extraordinary old occasion. I don't know, did you watch much of it? But just to give people a sense of the tone as we kick off our conversation, you know, Dave Jones came on and, you know, evoked Prince William quotes and everything else, and it was real state of the nation stuff here. And then Gary Neville, not surprisingly, if you saw him yesterday, he was every bit as angry, I think is the best word, as he was yesterday this evening. So here's a little sense of Gary Neville, Pat, on Monday Night Football tonight.
It's difficult not to get emotional and feel sick. But honestly, you've got to write to your MPs, you've got to, your local football clubs, you've got to write, everybody's got to come behind this. Pundits for BBC, ITV, BT Sport, forget allegiances, forget who you support. We have got to come together to stop this proposal. This is an attack on everything that's been important in this country. Football has helped in the last 10 months in the midst of a pandemic more than ever keep people going. And they're trying to take it away from us. I feel slightly complicit. I've stayed pretty quiet in terms of the Glazer family over the years. Stayed pretty quiet because I've thought when the club were taken over as a PLC that you knew it could be bought and it was out of the control of players, of fans, of everybody. I believe in a free market, generally in life. And I've always thought, what's the answer to the Glazers? Who takes them out? Russia, China, state money for the 2 or 3 billion quid it would need? And I've stayed quiet on the basis that it's still Manchester United. I can still go and watch the lads play. I can be happy and I can be sad. I'm still watching football in this country. If they take dividends out, all right, it's dividends. I can live with it slightly. But what I can't live with is attacking every single football fan in this country. They have stepped over the mark. They are scavengers. And they need booting out of this football club and they need booting out of this country. And we have got to come together now. It might be too late. There'll be people at Manchester United, fans who were arguing 15 years ago, who will say, it's too late. It's never too late. We have got to stop this. It is absolutely critical we do.
Gary Neville this evening on Monday Night Football, call to arms there. Did you watch that hour, Pat?
No, I was busy doing other interviews myself for other organisations.
Yeah.
To myself, I'm kind of happy not to listen to what other people say, because you have your own viewpoints on it and your own position on it. Mm. And it's kind of easy to be swayed and join in what becomes the norm. You have to have your own open viewpoints and your own reasons why you say and why you think and why you think actually things happen. The anger, I'm pretty happy about it. I'm pretty happy there's so much anger about, because football would have been gone had people not been angry about it. I can remember being roughly that angry when the Premier League started. I felt that way about the Premier League.
Right.
I was gutted by them. I thought, you slimeballs, you're just kicking all those other clubs out of the way and you're going to take the lion's share of the money and they're going to be left in the gutter to try and survive in some difficult way. Yeah, I was right.
Hmm.
It's no different now, is it? Does that sound exactly what is happening now, but only in a world scale?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've kind of, that's the glazing over that I would feel slightly uncomfortable about. So, yeah. It's annoying, it's infuriating, it's nothing got to do with football. It's football is a pure business of what's happening just now, or what they're trying to do just now. If indeed they are trying to do what we think they're trying to do, which I'm not absolutely convinced by, I still think it could be a bargaining chip.
Yeah.
They want to get more money out of UEFA, they want to get the Champions League working in their way, and this is a massive, this is the biggest game of poker you've ever seen. And by the way, they've just thrown everything in the first hand, massive amount in the first hand. Because when you look at a variety of things, of the legality of it, of the people they haven't talked to yet, I mean, honestly, I know the power of the unions. I know the power of the players' union. I know the power of PFA, FIFPro. And now you spoke to them. I mean, what are you thinking about? These are the guys that are... As the members, would you do that with any organisation? I mean, going back to the newspapers in the 80s in the UK, you end up having riots on the street, etc., because you try to sort of dump that and not going through the correct channels, or some even make some semblance of an effort at going through the channels. So that's just one area. When you go into the legal ramifications of it, it's mental, it's bizarre. And by the way, anyone who tells you they understand it is lying, because they don't. Footballers are wealthy just now. Tell you what, players are going to be a lot wealthier over the next wee while. They're going to make some amount of money. I talk about that side of it, because see all the other sides of it, where we're all angry, and the fans are angry, and everyone who loves the game is angry, and all that sort of stuff. It's okay, that's there, that's part, I've done that, and I feel that. But where's that going to get us? I want to know why they're doing it. Why are you doing it now? Because it's easy to say, oh, it's just greed. Yeah, it's just greed. They're minted with some of them. So why are you doing it if you... It must be other things on top of that. It must be other things on top of that. And I have just got a suspicion that from within that group, there's not one reasoning. There's a good number of reasonings for it. And some of them are not well thought out. Some of them are actually quite well thought out. And actually are, although I disagree with them intently, I actually partially understand them. Can I give you one example?
Please, give us a few.
Right, Barcelona.
Broke.
Look at their accounts for
broke, yeah. Barcelona, stuff. I guess, yeah.
Net, right, so, and by the way, see if you're going to get any good again. You're going to have to go and spend that amount again. You're not getting that money. And by the way, the only way to get it, is you can't even get it if you win the Champions League. You're not getting it that way. That's,
no,
not
well, as a brief interruption, sorry, just to put this in context, just as a signing up fee, let alone the 4 billion they carve up every year thereafter, just as a signing up fee, they all get 350 million up front. Bayern, for winning the Champions League last year, got 90 million.
Exactly. And this is the point. So there's no point in shouting and bawling and screaming, but I think you must put yourself in their position so you understand the absolute reasons for doing it. They're not going to tell you the truth. They're going to say it's for the good of the game and it'll be a special comment. All that stuff. Right, just blanket. Right, you need to understand the reason why people are doing things. And of course, it's the economy, stupid. Right, that's always the answer. But why is it the answer? So if you're Barcelona, what do you do? So you're going to have to get out of this. Well, to get out of it is unthinkable, other than you go absolutely mental down this direction, right? So you've got yourself out of your troubles. You've actually now saved yourself that you don't have to go and qualify anymore. You're secure in this little bubble and there's no problems anymore. If you don't do that, you're up against sovereign states. You cannot fight against financially. And you're stuffed, right? So what's your other options? Put yourself in that position. What's your options? Your option is to go and say, hello, China. Anybody want to buy a club? Or else you go... you look at Roman Abramovich, he can't stay with these other ones. So it's amazing the amount of money that you have to get there. So if the likes of Barcelona don't do this, don't do something extreme, they could be gone, and certainly gone in the absolute upper echelons. They're a world-renowned club. You've got a huge fan base. It's all secondary.
Yeah.
And what if Real Madrid and all the others started up this Super League in Barcelona, who we all thought were this purest of pure clubs, decided to say no? They're stuffed, because if all the money goes there, they'd be even worse position, unless they decide to redesign themselves as a more normal club, which, of course, I don't think the fans would accept either.
Yeah.
So go inside every single club and think why. I don't know the inside of Chelsea. By the way, I would think below chairman, chief exec and owner level. I don't think anyone in the clubs knows what the hell's going on. I don't think they do. I think this is so tiny little strata of the upper echelon that's doing this. And whether they've taken good enough advice from various areas, who knows? It doesn't sound like it to me. But you look at someone like, I say Chelsea, but I don't know what's going on there. What happens if something happened to Roman Abramovich tomorrow? What happens to that club? In all seriousness, what actually happens? It is frightening, isn't it? If you are in charge of that, or try to run that, or try to keep that going to any sort of level, it's wild, man, what could happen? So that's just two off the top of my head. You could go through others and think, and the other one is, you know, if you're the classic left, you're the guy sitting, standing on the platform when the train leaves, kind of thing, right? That stuff as well. Don't think, oh, it's just greed, and close your mind. And don't just go pure anger either. Try and understand it, because you'll not beat these people unless you understand where they're coming from. I think there's a lot of desperation there.
Oh, totally.
I also think there's a big poker game.
Yeah, I agree as well. I can't get that angry about it, because I do think it's a poker game. And I do think ultimately UEFA and the dirty dozen, as Alexander Seferin has called them, will sit down. And I wouldn't be surprised if these 12 and maybe one or two others have guaranteed places in the new expanded Champions League. Like, the big news today was that the current new Champions League reforms mean that there are two places held back for teams who don't qualify automatically. You know, that's kind of interesting that already in their back pocket, UEFA are having to acknowledge that, okay, a Man United or a Juventus or one of the big boys with lots of big fan base, Barcelona, have a horror season. Look, we'll sneak it in the Champions League in this new format. That's kind of interesting that's happened. So I suspect that's the middle ground they're all heading to, because it's very clear Man City are fine and PSG are fine. And most of the others are kind of crippled by this arms race that they can't keep up with. So they're desperate and they're happy to go along with this. And the Americans are like, hang on, how are we meant to organise our business when we don't know if we have 25% of our revenue until the top four places are guaranteed? I mean, they come from a different world where, you know, relegation in John Henry's world and the Glazers' world is not making the Champions League. Like, this is the relegation they're talking about, not the Premier League. So, you know, all the different interests are swirling around for sure. How does the game of poker end? Like, I presume Premier League aren't going to kick them out, surely.
I'm supposed to go to the Chelsea Real Madrid game next week. I don't know if I'm going yet. <'Cause> just no idea, because they're talking about kicking.
Well, that could happen out. Friday, yeah. Friday, yeah, the Danish UEFA member Jesper Møller says Chelsea, Man City, Real Madrid out of the Champions League Friday. Same for Arsenal, Man United in the Europa League. So that's swirling. Apparently the threat of banning them from international football for Euro 2020 will not hold up. So Euro 2020 is safe. And then, well, I guess Qatar and the courts is a different matter. If they want to keep them out of the World Cup, who knows?
Do you know someone pulls out a knife, you pull out a knife, or they pull out a gun, you pull out a gun. Someone pulls out a nuclear warhead, you pull out a nuclear warhead. Mm. That's where we are. The thing is, they've not gone through the steps first. They've just gone straight nuclear.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. And that's what's so shocking about it. In a way, it's, you almost feel, and I don't know if they're this clever, they've thought, oh, let's skip all those other steps and just let's get to the business end of this argument and go as extreme as you possibly can. The problem with these kind of nuclear standoffs, somebody better back down and someone better blink at some point in time. Because if they don't, the destruction that could happen around it is extraordinary to the entire world game of football. It is absolutely unthinkable and extraordinary what could actually happen to it. A amount of people I've talked to or listened to, or you know, of the consideration of what I think could happen, it doesn't bear thinking about. It really doesn't bear thinking about. You know,
so give me a sense of that, because I look, this is, you know, and prepared to be shot down, I'm sure, but like the experience, for instance, of an Irish fan who in the main supports United or Liverpool and maybe one of the other big six that are moving, their day-to-day experience of supporting the club is not going to change. You know, they'll still watch Champions League and they'll get, well, sorry, the Super League, they'll get better games. They'll hopefully still be in the Premier League and that's all fine. They're talking about...
You say that.
Yeah, so go on, hit me. What's the devastation?
If they're not allowed in the Champions League and it's only the Super League, and then the Premier League say, right, we're not having it. And the Premier League not get it. Premier League say, no, get out. This happened to me oddly enough. And a much smaller way. It felt big at the time, but it was a much smaller way. I was in Scotland, and I was the chief executive at Motherwell, right?
Mm.
And Celtic and Rangers told everybody they wanted to move to England.
Mm.
And I sat there in the meeting with the other 10 saying, tell them to get stuff done. Tell them to go. Like, what if they go? They're going nowhere. They've nowhere to go. England won't touch them with a barge pole. I happen to have some contacts down there.
Right.
They're going nowhere. We have actually got a bigger gun than them just now. We just don't know it. And are we going to be brave enough to do this? Because if what happens if they do go? Where are they going to go? Right? You're going to Belgium or something like that? All right, on you go. What will our league become? Now, please do not take this personally, but it was just the phrase that was used at the time. We will become like the League of Ireland, i.e. partially semi-professional, etc. And I said, well, you don't know. But is it actually any worse than you are at the moment and where you could be if you go to what they want, actually, because they wanted something like 95% of all television monies just to stay. In the end, I just said, no, still a minute. It doesn't matter, because there comes to a point where you know, I've actually got nothing to lose. And I actually think that's where the Premier League are just now.
Right.
You lose those top six and they go and play in the Super League and then throw in a kind of half team for your Premier League and don't really care about it because it isn't getting them qualification for anywhere, then their product, it's not dead, but it's completely diminished. And if television companies then go and follow the Super League and don't follow the Premier League and don't give them the same monies, the Premier League might as well just say, oh, get stuffed, get lost. They might as well say it, because I actually don't think they'll have that much to lose. What do you want? Man United's B team? Or just tell Man United to go and get lost?
Well, it's an interesting point. I mean, Man United's B team will still be pretty damn good if they're getting $350 million and then carving up the $3-4 billion.
Will you do that? Have you ever seen football work like that? What you do is you get top heavy and everything goes top heavy.
Mm.
You look at the money that's been spent on all the squads just now. Some of them still haven't enough players.
Yeah.
Have a look at the money they're spending.
Yeah.
Have a look at Barcelona. This is the money they're spending, and have a look at when three or four guys get injured. What you've got, it just gets top heavy. It's the nature of that beast. And that's exactly what they do. So
you think that if it comes to, and this for me, this could be the real deciding issue. If it comes to Premier League sitting across the table from these six, and say the other 14 clubs are there, you think the six blink first? You think they can't risk being turfed out?
I don't know who's brave enough. I don't know. That's the point I'm making.
Mm.
The six might blink, the 14 might blink. Nightmare scenario, neither does. And that's a possibility. And that is the horror, you know, and it's back to the Cuban Missile Crisis. You're thinking, somebody better blink here, because we're all going to get stuffed if they don't. And that's why, you know, for mutual self-interest, they probably will. They'll find a way. There'll be a backdoor that they'll find a way of doing it. But that's a long way down the line. We've got a lot of stuff to go through before we get to that point. Just all the stuff that we're going to have to go through, and all the name calling, and all the vicious stuff, and all the legal writs that are going to happen over the next wee while.
Yeah,
we're going to have to go through all that first. And I'll follow it, and I'm sure we'll all follow it. But I want to know where we end up after this. And if I think you and I are probably quite close together here, I think we'll end up with those big clubs get a bit more than they have at the moment from the Champions League and move on.
Well, in 2018, I mean, Scudamore gave the top six a bigger share of the TV money, you know, and so they're used to kind of getting their way, and they're now at a point where they're in the habit of others acknowledging, well, we're the main show in town, we're bringing in all the eyeballs, so we should start getting some more money. There was one last point before I wanted to hit on Mourinho. And so, look, this is a... In terms of, like, football is for the fans and all these banners, like Leeds United came out tonight in, like, football is for the fans T-shirts, and the fans are protesting and they're talking about how our game has been stolen. How would this situation, as proposed by the European Super League, change the lives of fans at all? Like, fans are already being screwed. You know, Sky Sports led the charge over the last 2 days and charged fans their 60, 70, 80 euro per month for the privilege of watching them do so. Fixtures and kickoff times are at stupid o'clock for fans travelling on a Tuesday evening from one end of the country to another. Tickets are going up. Increasingly, tourists are filling Premier League grounds. Young people can't afford to go to games. It's one of the reasons atmospheres aren't as good. Like, this notion that fans had it pretty good up until now, I mean, that ship has sailed a long time ago. Genuinely, apart from maybe like an Everton trying to build this stadium with dreams of getting into the Champions League and make it big, and Leicester having to look at Arsenal saying, you know, thanks for everything the last couple of years, Leicester, we're going to head back into Europe now. Aside from those kind of couple of unique sets of fans, like the Leicesters or whatever, or Everton, like how is this bad for fans? How is like the fans' life transformed by this happening?
I think the fans now know that they don't count anywhere near as much as they thought they did.
How could they think they counted?
No, they thought they counted a bit. And you go to any of the big grounds and they're passionate, it's their club. Every fan will tell you it's our club. And there's guys up the top of the club saying, no, it's not, it's ours. Mm. We'll do what we like with it. What they need to figure out, what they need to understand now is, right, it's just a numbers game, right? It's purely a numbers game. It's a finance numbers game. If the fans here aren't getting treated particularly well, they can either like it or lump it. Where is the real money? The real money's in China.
Yeah.
The real money's in India. It's in the Americas. It's those global eyes. Now, this product, and excuse me for talking in their language, but I was schooled in it. This product isn't as good when it hasn't got those fans or that noise or that atmosphere. They might have to pipe in the noise like we are at the moment. So it becomes sellable for those other markets. When you consider the size of those markets and when you do the sums in those markets, and you do that in the consideration that those clubs are frightened that they can't actually hang on to this Ferrari that's roaring away from them. You look at it in those terms, you realise the fans are important, but it's the ones in Africa and it's the ones in China.
Sure.
And it's those ones because there's billions of them.
And which fans here have more right to feel disenfranchised? Like, are you saying Liverpool fans or United fans feel like, oh, they've betrayed me?
Can I say one thing? And this is the love and the joy of football.
Yeah.
And it's not worked great. There's always a team for you. You know, if you don't like Manchester United, that other team that set up out of the ashes, sure, they said, yeah, refused to do it.
I got that. This leverage buyout and the Glazers have milked the club and they're everything that's wrong. So, but do you, when you're seeing all the banners now, football is for the fans, like, have Man United fans been betrayed or Liverpool fans been betrayed by this European Super League? I don't really get that.
Well, the thing is, they have been, if what they are sold is then a pub, it's actually this sterile, stale, unchanging system that they go and play the same teams time after time after time after time. And then the product that they really enjoyed, the domestic one, is some really thin gruel, and they don't enjoy it anymore. That's when you're stuffed. That's when, and then, by the way, you're still expected to turn up in your 30 and 40 and 50 thousands and go mad. It's something that's quite clearly been given to you as second class, and you've spent your money on this.
Okay, so the betrayal is what it does to the domestic game.
Yeah, I think it has a real chance of doing that. And by the other betrayal is, if you are of any national persuasion at all, what it could do to the international game as well. I mean, that's a whole different thing. So there's a whole bunch of areas where I think the fan will not feel the same. And there's a lot of people who are pushed to the edge at the moment. There's too much football on the telly as it is. Mm. I mean, I love football. I work in the thing. Mm. I can't watch all the games.
No, I
wouldn't watch all the games. And that's somebody who's like bathed in it. And I'm not the only one. Everyone's very, very similar. We're in lockdown now, so we've been saturated with it. When we come out of this, it's a different world. And these people have done the Super League. If you tell me they know how to figure everything out, know how everything's going to go forward, well done, because you've not figured out the reaction to this. You've got that first bit wrong.
True.
So there's a fair chance you've got other bits wrong down the line, which are only subjective guesses anyway.
I guess, look, maybe it's through the job or whatever, where you have to take more of a sober-eyed view of things. But I mean, this, for instance, that this means more Liverpool business compared to their treatment of residents around Anfield. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, what illusion people operating under? I mean,
little cliches like that. They sound like sometimes advertising campaigns. I've spent a lot of time working them up, and I'm not saying it absolutely is the case. And sometimes.